Morning.
Morning.
I knew it would be like this, but you all remembered to set your clocks ahead. And so you get extra brownie points in heaven. I can arrange that. You know I'm kidding, right? Personally, I think when the sun comes up at 8:30, we have changed too early in the year, but I'm turning into an old fogey, which also means I need glasses to see these notes. So, we're heading into Easter, and we're starting a new series today to prepare for Easter, looking at the life of Jesus. I know that a few of you think we talk about Jesus too much as it is, but this is church, and it's going to be Easter, so... The reason we look at the life of Jesus so often is because we see him as our role model for living as fully as we can, allowing the divine to express through us as us. Jesus is what that looks like. Jesus expressed his teachings and offered himself in three main ways: his deeds, mostly remembered as miracles, his words, like the Sermon on the Mount and the parables he told, and his presence. Not only what it was like to be in his presence, but where and when he showed up. His presence alone made a statement. So it occurs to me those are also the ways that we express the God within to each other and the world, through our deeds, words, and presence, who we spend time with, where we show up, how we deploy our energy. So between now and Easter, we'll talk about what the divine looked like in Jesus and what it might look like for us. We'll start today with Jesus' deeds, his actions. The stories we have about Jesus include three basic types of miracles: abundance miracles, like multiplying loaves and fishes, changing water into wine; nature miracles, calming the sea, walking on water; and healing miracles that were about a lot more than wellness. Many of these stories are familiar if you've spent much time in a Christian church. But let's pause to talk about how literally we're going to take these stories. Most of the scholarship about Jesus in the past 30 to 50 years has been historical, meaning who was he really, what times did he live in, what really happened. The miracle stories have been considered mostly folklore. Maybe he healed a few people. Faith healing was common at the time, but walking on water, raising the dead, scholars consider to be nothing more than good stories. They were a way to say, my God's bigger than your God. I wrestled for years trying to decide whether to take stories about Jesus literally. Of course, I grew up being taught, if you don't believe this really happened exactly the way it's written, then it has no meaning at all. So my childhood church training in literalism, along with my years of training as a reporter, had me focused on the facts. What could be proven? What did we know for sure? I'm so glad I finally learned the difference between facts and truth. All lasting stories express deep truths about the human condition. That's why we tell them over and over with different details through thousands of years. Stories in the Bible are not documentaries. They were never meant to be just the facts, ma'am. They're sketches, they're impressionist paintings, some based on actual history and some myths that developed over centuries. Myths are the way we explain the world to ourselves. So for me now, the stories themselves have great meaning whether they ever happened or not. And the more I learn about energy and universal principle and quantum physics, the more I tend to think the miracle stories actually happened, or something like them. They demonstrate the powers that we're only beginning to suspect we have. So you can decide for yourself whether you believe these stories are literal or whether you even care. We study them for the nuggets of eternal truth. We study them to understand ourselves. And regardless of what we think, these stories were important and wildly popular with people at the time. The more closely we look, the more meaning they have. Where Jesus performed miracles, who he performed them for, the underlying symbolism in the way the stories are told. So, three types of miracles: healing, nature, and abundance. Let's start with abundance. Jesus performed miracles to excess. When he took the loaves and fishes from the little boy's lunch, he multiplied it to feed 5,000 men and their families and had 12 baskets of scraps left over. When he changed water into wine at the wedding in Cana, he used 6 stone jars of water, or jugs of water. The Bible specified each jar held 20 to 30 gallons. That's 180 gallons of wine for one party. I know, but I think that's even more than we have at the Volunteer Appreciation Dinner. That's like 4 or 5 bathtubs full of wine. And that was at the end of the party. And it was good wine. The book of John makes sure we know it was not the cheap stuff. So what was the point of excess? Was Jesus just showing off? We'll talk next week about Jesus' words. But you know, he was always talking about the kingdom of heaven, trying to explain what it's like. Not heaven is the afterlife, but what we can create here and now. Heaven is a state of mind. It's the Christ consciousness. It is living in our full spiritual power, even while we are in human form, as Jesus did, fully human and fully divine. Jesus often described the kingdom of heaven as abundance, excess, like a tiny mustard seed that grows and proliferates everywhere, like leaven in bread that rises enough to fill the house. The kingdom of heaven is abundance. It's everything we could possibly need and more. It's an extravagant universe, and it is the Father's good pleasure to give us the kingdom. So you see how Jesus was making more than one point with his miracles, his deeds. So let's look at that in the context of healing miracles. We turn now to lepers and demons. We know from the Old Testament that the Jews had a great many rules concerning the human body, many ways that they might be considered unclean, but they also had rituals to purify themselves. They had rules for what to eat, lots of physical rules. Some of it was common sense for people living in the hot desert with no refrigeration. Some of it was about status, women, men, and slaves. Some of it was about worship. But obeying rules shaped the way Jews thought of themselves and dictated their relationship with God. So consider that the human body is a microcosm of the political body. It's society in miniature. What people do with their bodies makes a statement in their society. The way they dress, wear their hair, makeup, tattoos, scarring. Some of you are old enough to remember the 1970s, when long hair on boys made a statement. It wasn't just fashion. It was anti-war, anti-authority. And hair alone could greatly upset older generations. I've read that. So the Jews at this time were anti-authority. They were a minority sect in a land occupied by Romans. And one of the ways the Jews made a statement about their identity was with strict control over their bodies, with their rules for how to dress and how to eat. The Jews were holding themselves apart from the larger society. Strict rules and boundaries for each person's physical body. And skin is an important part of that. It is literally our outer boundary. The book of Leviticus in the Old Testament is full of rules, but it has 2 full chapters about skin. Boils, burns, lesions, leprosy. When the priest should declare someone unclean or not. Skin was important symbolically too, and this was probably unconscious. But when skin disintegrates, the whole body becomes porous and the boundaries are lost. So if the body is a symbol of society, then you have to maintain the integrity of the skin as a boundary. And leprosy is a direct assault on the skin. This is one of the leper stories from the Bible. It's in the book of Mark. A leper came to Jesus, begging him, And kneeling, he said to Jesus, "If you choose, you can make me clean." Moved with pity, Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him and said to him, "I do choose. Be made clean." Immediately, the leprosy left him and he was made clean. After sternly warning him, Jesus sent him away at once, saying to him, "See that you say nothing to anyone, but go show yourself to the priest." With leprosy, they were not just worried about contagion. It was an embarrassing, frightening symbol of contamination for the whole society. Lepers had to shout, "Unclean, unclean," everywhere they went, and they lived alone outside of town. So lepers lost their lives and their dignity. They were dead to their families, shunned, rejected. The illness of leprosy was far more than physical. Healing was needed around that in the whole society. Can you think of an illness today that not only devastates the body but carries a social stigma? I can think of more than one, but AIDS comes to mind. And we've seen so much healing as a society in dealing with AIDS. There is less stigma and fear. It doesn't have to ruin people's lives and jobs and families. We've found compassion for people living with HIV. And the world's efforts to help with AIDS in Africa are not just to provide medication, but to help heal their shattered societies and rescue their orphaned children. So we're getting better. For Jesus, healing the leper was not just a change in one person's physical condition, but a challenge to the social world. It was a threat to the boundary keepers and the controllers of society. Jesus broke the purity code. He touched a leper. Then he told the man to go show himself to the priest in the temple. Jewish priests confirmed miracles, but they also enforced the purity law. So take that, powers that be. This was an in-your-face miracle. This was not just compassion for the sick. It was the triumph of Jewish peasants over Jerusalem, the Jewish hierarchy that cooperated with the Romans. It was also an illustration of the kingdom of heaven, where health is ours for the asking, when our faith makes us well. So as always, Jesus was showing us what's possible for all human beings and how to create our experience. We can heal too, with the power of mind over body, and also with the power of our consciousness over the body politic, over the dictates of society. We can make the world a kinder, gentler place where everyone lives with acceptance and honor. Wouldn't that be a miracle? These stories about Jesus are told on so many levels, so we can read them as literal miracles, we can read them as physical healings, we can look at the symbols in each story and what they meant in that day and now. We can see them as healing for the whole society and also as political statements about the empire. So consider this story about demons. Most civilizations throughout human history have believed it is possible for supernatural spirits to possess a body, to overtake a personality. A lot of people believe that today. You saw The Exorcist. Jesus encountered a lot of demon possession, what they called demon possession. It might have been mental illness or even physical illness. There's one story about Jesus healing a boy with demons who clearly had epilepsy. So it didn't take much back then to be considered demon-possessed. Anyone rebellious or different was considered possessed. But this story about a man with demons has layers of meaning. This is also from Mark. They'd been out fishing, and when Jesus stepped out of the boat, immediately a man out of the tombs with an unclean spirit met him. He lived among the tombs, and no one could restrain him anymore, even with a chain. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and bowed down before him, and he shouted at the top of his voice, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God, do not torment me." For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." Then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" And he replied, "My name is Legion, for we are many." He begged Jesus earnestly not to send them out of the country. Now, there on the hillside, a great herd of swine was feeding, and the unclean spirits begged Jesus, "Send us into the swine, let us enter them." So he gave them permission. And the unclean spirits came out and entered the swine, and the herd, numbering about 2,000, rushed down the steep bank into the sea and were drowned in the sea. "My name is Legion, for we are many." Ever heard of a Roman legion? This is about Roman power. Those Roman spirits begged to be cast into pigs, the most unclean animals for the Jews, and then they ran off a cliff into the sea. Jewish peasants would have been howling with laughter and high-fiving each other because they felt possessed by demons named Legion. Roman legions, they were possessed by Romans and it was making them crazy, and they felt like jumping off a cliff sometimes. John Dominic Crossan is a Bible scholar, one of the leaders of the Jesus Seminar, and he wrote a book called Jesus, A Revolutionary Biography. He says, if all Jesus had done was talk about the kingdom, Lower Galilee would probably have greeted him with a great big peasant yawn. But you cannot ignore the healings and the exorcisms, especially in their socially subversive function. You cannot ignore the pointedly political overtones of the very term kingdom of God itself. It is, unfortunately, one of the abiding temptations of pastors and scholars to reduce Jesus to words alone, to replace a lived life with a preached sermon or an interesting idea. To remove, however, that which is radically subversive, socially revolutionary, and politically dangerous from Jesus' actions is to leave his life meaningless and his death inexplicable. So you're beginning to see the many ways that Jesus challenged the rigid social and religious rules, the Jewish law, and the Roman Empire. So when we get to the crucifixion story before Easter, you won't have to ask, what did Jesus do that was so threatening? The authorities had a long list. Some they could articulate and some not. They just knew they were terribly uncomfortable with Jesus and the effect he was having on these crowds. Raising Lazarus from the dead can be considered a political miracle. If the physical body represents the body politic, then Lazarus represented bringing all of them back from the dead, back from oppression and occupation, making them whole, standing up. They would rise again. It was threatening. There were lots of other miracles, of course. We've talked about miracles of abundance and healing, so let's look at the nature miracles. In the book of Mark, the disciples are in a boat, in a storm, and Jesus is asleep in the boat. They wake him up because they're so afraid about the storm. And he wakes up and looks around at the storm and says, "Peace, be still." And the sea goes perfectly calm. In another story, the disciples are alone in a storm, in a boat, and Jesus walks out to them on the water and makes them safe. In John, the disciples are fishing. They're not catching anything until Jesus hollers at them from the shore, "Try the right side of the boat." And on that side, they catch so many fish they can hardly haul up the nets. Nature and abundance. So on the surface, these lessons are pretty heavy-handed. Without Jesus, you get nowhere. With Jesus, everything is fine. But remember, every part of a Bible story represents a part of you as an individual. The power of Jesus is in you as the Christ, the divine from which your soul was made. These stories say when you try to navigate life from personality, you get in trouble. When you live from the Christ within, your divine energy, and stay aligned with God, then all is well. The storms are calmed and you are guided. Maybe the most illustrative deed is not that Jesus walked on water, but that Peter did. For just a minute. Jesus called his disciple Peter out of the boat, and Peter stepped out onto the water with Jesus. Jesus called forth from Peter his own divinity. And then Peter stopped believing it and got afraid and started to sink. And Jesus fished him out and said, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" He didn't mean have faith in me, Jesus. He meant, why don't you have faith in yourself? Jesus constantly reinforced the message that we can do what he did. We can let divine love express through us as it did through Jesus. We can heal each other through love and acceptance. We can share our abundance. We can take care of nature. We have the same power to change the world Jesus had, the same power to ignore conventional wisdom, to break the rules laid down by authority, to challenge and question the powers that be, while acting with compassion for all people. Wouldn't it be a miracle if we transformed our society with love? Wouldn't it be a miracle if those marginalized for any reason were accepted and included by us? I think of that march across the bridge in Selma yesterday. Don't you imagine our bodies and minds would be miraculously healthier if we lived in love, acceptance, and peace, free of demons? We are called to work wonders in this world. We're equipped for it. We were born for it. Jesus showed us what it looks like. Now is the time to claim that power within us for the sake of the whole world. So let's take these thoughts into meditation. When we meditate, we simply become still. You might close your eyes, take a deep breath, and relax. But meditation is to be still and know. Know that you are the divine expressing in human form. Know that you are the love and light that was also in Jesus. He was an example for us, not unattainable, although it may take us lifetimes to be like him. But we are learning and growing all the time, getting better, becoming a little more fair, a little more loving, accepting a few more groups of outcasts. And so as you turn within, imagine yourself in that heart space where the Christ energy resides in you. It is from here that you know perfect love and peace. From here that you accept all other expressions of God in all its various forms on the earth. As you open your heart, you make way for divine love to flow through you and to express as you. This is why you're here. To be an opening for God on this planet at this time. When we live from the Christ within, the storms are calmed and we are guided. And you will be guided in what to do, and when, and how. Your deeds may seem small or large, scary or not so much, but you will know what is yours to do as you allow this Christ presence to become all that you are. We're grateful for this awareness. Grateful for this human journey so we can grow a little more at the deepest soul level. And so it is. Amen. Thank you.